Hello, hello. Welcome back to There's No Ellen podcast, the podcast for the people by the people. And if you didn't know, we're the people who make unintentional and intentional jokes at ourselves and our audience. I'm your host, Matt, and I'm joined today by my co-host, Morgan.
Good morning.
What's up? If you enjoy, and even if you don't, join the movement by subscribing to There's No Ellen podcast on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, or by following us on Instagram at Noel Experience. This episode today is very different from our usual lighthearted and jokey episode. By now, everyone is following the current world crisis. And I think for the most part, people are taking it pretty seriously, which is pretty good. Today, we'll be interviewing a patient that has had and recovered from the virus here in Barbados. We read about his story in the newspaper, and we thought it would be interesting to have him on the show, both to make our listeners aware of what it's like, as well as to warn them and advise them to continue following the government guidelines, and also to heap some very warranted praise on our healthcare workers and anyone involved in caring for patients, or in any way helping during this current situation. That all being said, let's hop on the call with our guest, and we'll give our close out and final thoughts afterward.
Hi Mike, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us. How are you doing?
I'm good now, thanks. Thanks for asking me. It's nice to be here.
Perfect. As we mentioned to our audience before, Mike recently contracted the virus, was isolated and treated here in Barbados, and has thankfully fully recovered now. If you want, you can read his story in the April 21st version of the newspaper, as well as seeing his certificate of clearance. We just wanted to get him on the show to talk a little bit about his experience and show the importance of listening to the government guidelines and complement the tireless work of our health workers. Again, thanks for joining us, Mike. Bear with us as we're relatively new to having guests on the show. I think we should start with just telling us a little bit about yourself. I read you're an addiction therapist from Scotland.
Yeah, I've been doing addiction work for a long time because I'm actually in recovery myself from addiction to alcohol and drugs for many years. So I'm also a registered nurse. I've been a registered nurse for 40 years, so it's my upcoming 60th birthday in a couple of weeks, so I thought I would come over here and visit some friends of mine to celebrate my 60th. Arrived on Monday the 16th, met my friends and went out for a dinner, and that was a Monday evening.
Yeah.
And during the week I was okay, but by Friday afternoon I started to feel unwell, but not any of the symptoms that are commonly associated with the virus. I looked on websites and things, and I wasn't the least bit concerned that that was what was wrong,
right?
Because I had some abdominal pain. I was thinking more food poisoning than anything else, really.
Right.
Abdominal pain and lower back pain. So that was on the Friday night. On the Saturday morning, I went to Cloverleaf Medical Centre.
Okay.
And waited and saw the nurse first, who put me on a machine to do blood pressure, pulse, stuff like that, which was all fine. But then she noticed that my blood oxygen level was about half what it should be. So she immediately went, oh my goodness, and she got a doctor, and the two of them came in wearing masks, and the two of them went, oh my God, we think we need to get you up to Paragon. So I was kind of isolated in the clinic, and then
right. An
appointment was made, and I had to go out then and drive. I'd never been to Paragon. It's not signposted, but I didn't know where it was. So I was driving around the airport, kind of trying to find this place. But eventually I found it, and I had to wait and be tested, which is the nasal swab up each nostril and down the back here. So quite uncomfortable, but not too painful. And they said they would give me the result within 24 hours, but probably the next morning. So I had to go back to my apartment and just stay in my apartment. And at 7:30 the next morning, the doctor called and said, you've tested positive, you need to come in and be quarantined.
Right, okay. Yeah,
so it was a bit of a shock. It wasn't what I expected.
Yeah.
I still kept thinking there must be a mistake, because I still didn't have a cough or a chestiness or flu symptoms. It was all abdominal, so it was really strange.
Yeah, that's
so
interesting.
It was different to what I expected. It was a bit of a culture shock to arrive in a military base.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Shown into a barrack room to, I think at that time it was maybe 8 or 10 people already there, 10 males in this. And it has just kind of bunk beds up each side of the building. There wasn't any top bunks, just both the lower bunks. But you just had to meet people, say hello, and grab a bed, and then that was it. So maybe I'll be here for a week, maybe I'll be here for 2 weeks at most. But I was there for 29 days, because it took longer for the virus to clear from my system.
Wow.
For some reason. don't know why that was, but some people seem to be clearing at different rates. There's people still in isolation who were in before me and may haven't been released yet.
Oh, wow.
Some people are taking longer than others.
Right. So when you got there, obviously that must have been pretty traumatic with lots of things going on in your mind. What were you kind of thinking? I know you said you were hoping to only be there for 2 weeks, but did they give you an indication of, you know, what was going to happen? Or was it kind of like, okay, these people all have it. This is where you'll be staying. We're going to be checking you every day. How did that go down?
It was kind of just like that. The first thing though I have to say, and that's being a nurse for most of my life, it was quite a shock that everybody was in white suits and visors and all you could see was eyes. That kind of takes a bit of a shock in itself that you can't see people's faces, right. Don't know who they are, you're treated as if you're infectious. So you've got this kind of always a kind of barrier of people that are trying to help you, but they stand back. So that was one of the strangest things for me to begin with. Even after I left, I don't know what the doctors looked like because of them. So if I walked up to them in the street, I wouldn't know them. I would only know them if I recognised their eyes. The nurses were slightly different. The nurses wore masks and uniforms, but they weren't completely covered up in PPE. But it was that kind of gentle explanation of what's going to happen, an explanation that the only way you're going to get out is to have two consecutive negative tests, one after the other,
right.
Which was, and that became the goal. You just thought, well, I need to get my two negatives and then I'll get out. So it was strange. There wasn't a routine as such. You never got up every day and had to do certain things. It became like most institutions, you began to be focused on what the next meal was going to be. So it would be, you'd finish breakfast and think, I wonder what's for lunch, because that was the next event of the day. So you tended to just sit about and have conversations, and some people had music, and I had my laptop, and I was my iPad, so I was doing stuff on the internet, and emailing people, and having FaceTime with my family and things. So you found things to do, but it was a long day. You kind of woke up at 6 o'clock in the morning, and then lights out were at 10 o'clock at night. In between that, you had meals, and you got seen by the doctors twice a day. They came in and did a kind of ward round and went around everyone and checked for the temperature and pulse and things like that. It was a very different experience, but also because I'm a nurse, I watched how they operate, and I just took my hat off to them. I took my hat off to the commitment of these people that stepped forward and said they would work with this virus, and kind of the risks they took for their own health to try and help other people. It was very impressive, and it was very inspiring to see that. And they kept our spirits up, particularly the nurses. There was a lot of humour. There was a lot of making us laugh when we were moaning about things. When you get past kind of 2 weeks, each day then becomes a bit more of a slog. I guess it's somewhat like being in prison, because you've not got the choice to leave. So your choices have been removed. Your liberty's been removed. And when you're an independent person, that can be quite difficult to deal with.
Yeah, I never really thought about it, but hearing you say it now, first of all, the fact that you've been a nurse for so long gives us actually a great technical background on what these people are doing, as you said. But I think the fact, as you said, that these people are coming in every day, risking their life, basically, to help others, I think that's a great credit to them and really to anybody who's been.
Yeah. So even on days when I was feeling ungrateful and angry, I looked at them and thought, you've left your family to come in here in this heat to wear all this equipment and be cooking hot to protect yourself. And it just kind of took away any sparks of anger or ingratitude that I was feeling. I just kind of took my hat off to them every day.
Yeah, and I think actually the fact that you are saying these things as well, I think that some people may not look at it that way. So I guess some aspects, hat off to you as well for thinking about it that way too, because other people may just be thinking about, you know, themselves and being a bit selfish, which you could understand in a situation like that. And they may be thinking about the nurses and what they have sacrificed to do that.
I think that's partly to do with being in recovery from addiction for 24 years. So I'm used to working a program that makes me look at things and the positive rather than the negative, because the negative can lead to relapse and drinking and things like that. So my brain is habitually trying to make the glass half full rather than half empty. And it's a good way to reframe things into a more palatable way of accepting them.
Yeah, I think you're right. So I guess onto a more happy note now. So you said that to get released, you needed to get your two negative tests back to back. How did that feel when you finally got that? Was there any before that maybe you had got one and not the second back to back? Or was
there
it just...
Was. There was. At 21 days, I got my first negative, so I was over the moon. I was like, oh my goodness, I'm going to get out tomorrow, because it's usually the following day that you have the second result. So I was very excited. I had started thinking about where am I going to go, how am I going to try and get home, all that kind of stuff. Whereas when I was just stuck there, I wasn't going any further than the day. I was staying in the day and keeping it in the moment. So on the next day, my result came back and it was positive again. And that was the most destructive moment I felt in there. It was like, oh, for God's sake, how can this be? And it meant then I had at least 5 or 6 days before the retest would be done, because the doctors were trying to make it easier for people not to get depressed. They were trying not to test too much, because people were getting negative, positive, and it was starting to affect people's mental health. People were getting a bit down and a bit depressed, So they created a longer period in the hope that you would be more likely to have a negative test. So by that time, there were 6 of us left and 3 of us got negatives in the second week. So that would be the 28 days, 3 of us got negatives and 2 of us had already had negatives and positives. So we were a bit kind of anxious about this might happen again, it might happen again. So following morning, the doctor came in and he told me immediately, you've got a negative, you'll be leaving today. And I was so elated, I wanted to shout, but then I looked at my friend, because they were also waiting on the results, and they had returned positive again. So it was a sad moment for me, looking at their faces, knowing how I felt, but knowing that they were going to have to stay there. And they had all been in before me. So there's this unknown quantity of how long some people take to clear it from the system. It was a great moment, and the nurses and the doctors have a kind of ceremony when you clear the virus and you start to leave, have a music playing and they all sing and clap and cheer, and you get a big gift for leaving. So it really kind of lifts people up before they go out that gate and go back to their life. It's very nice.
Yeah, that does sound very, very nice indeed.
And you also get the certificate, so I'm one of the few people who's got a certificate saying that I don't have the virus.
Right.
But most people don't have that. So
yeah, it's true.
I was joking, but when I get home, I'm making a T-shirt for it. It's going on in front of a T-shirt, definitely. Because I don't do shame. That's why I don't mind talking about it. I'm not responsible for catching an illness, so I don't feel any shame about it. And I don't think anybody should.
I agree. So after that, what's the first thing you did when you got out? Obviously, you must have got back to the place you were staying and called your family, and they must have been all overjoyed.
It was very exciting. It was very exciting, but it was also tempered by the fact that there's still a curfew. So although I had escaped from there, I'm actually with everybody else now. I'm stuck in the house. I can only go out on the days that I'm allocated for shopping and stuff. But I felt really uplifted by the response from Barbados, from not just from the nurses. I did a few interviews and some of my stuff went viral. That's never happened to me before. On the Tuesday after I left, I was trending on Twitter because I'd said nice things about the staff.
Yeah.
So it was a positive thing for me, and it kept me busy, because on the Tuesday morning, I think I woke up and I had 250 friend requests overnight.
Oh, wow.
Because I'd went viral, and some of my things had been shared 15,000 times. It was like,
wow.
Oh my God.
That's crazy.
But it kind of gave me some drive, and it gave me some purpose, because I'm sitting about, there's no flight, I've not got a lot to do really. So it gave some daily stuff to be doing, and I keep doing bits and bobs for publicising things. I've done an interview with the people who are doing tonight's programme as a survivor of the virus,
right,
just to let people see that you can get past it.
I'm glad that you're able to do that, and to give people who, from our perspective, have only been able to see what it's like in, you know, lockdown and within our own homes. And it's kind of gives you a reason to not go outside or to listen to what they're saying, because it can get very serious. And I know I, for one, don't want to obviously contract it and to have to go through what you've gone through. So, you know,
I think as well, for me, when I arrived, came across the tarmac to go into the airport, and there was medical staff there with masks, and they were scanning temperatures. And at that point, I said, oh my God, Barbados have got their act together. They know exactly what they're doing. Because when I left, there was no restrictions in place. There was the airports are still open. I on this, as you can imagine, closely, because I've been right in the centre of it. And I think the strategy that is being played out here is wonderful. I think the fact 6 deaths is tragic, but I think the fact that you've got such a low number is credit to them. It's working. It's impacting in a positive way. It's containing the virus. And even the amount of tests compared to the amount of people who have tested positive is a great big difference. You know what I mean? If you look at the UK and other places, there's thousands and thousands of people got it. There's less than 100 in Barbados.
So I guess that kind of puts it all in perspective for everyone. And if anyone was out there that was thinking, you know, this is a bit of a waste of time what they're doing, hopefully listening to this will kind of get them in the mindset of, you know, listen to the government guidelines. As you said, they seem to be doing a very good job at that, and they were preemptive. Obviously no one's perfect, so there is things and there will be things that people have contentious, you know, opinions on, but I think for the most part they're doing a good job, and it sounds like treating the patients what was good too. So credit to the government, credit to the healthcare worker. And I guess, Morgan, you want to take us out with the outro from there?
Well, I just want to say again, thanks a lot for coming on, Mike. I'm sorry this had to happen to you, but at least we've been able to put a positive spin on it.
Thank you very much. It's been my pleasure. Thank you for your interest and your support. I appreciate it.
No problem.
Is there anything else that you may want to speak about or touch on that maybe the people who are listening to haven't heard already, or just a little bit of a tip, anything like that?
No, well, I'm here until flights resume. I don't know when that's going to be. So my website's mikedelaney.co.uk. So if you want to go in there, have a look. If there's anything you want to ask me or anything you might need about support with, send me an email via the website, and then I'm here. I can do stuff here.
Right. That's great. Thanks. Well, I think I speak for everyone when I say we wish you well, and we hope you can get back to your family sooner rather than later. Again, a big shout out to all the healthcare workers that treated you and everybody else during this so greatly. We salute you, and we on the show, and we hope that our listeners too will continue to adhere to the government guidelines as we hope to navigate this crisis safely.
Yes, I agree. Please do.
Well, thanks a lot, Mike. We appreciate you coming on.
See you later.
Well, I think that's a pretty scary situation throughout the globe right now, especially from his perspective, which is obviously a very interesting one. But it also brings into the light a different angle. Like, although we have to stay home now, and that's obviously not ideal for a lot of people, and can even be quite taxing for some people, it seems quite necessary, not only for ourselves, our family, obviously, for these healthcare workers who are putting, as he said, their health at risk to care for these people and what could be us or what could be our families. So I think that went quite well just now.
I think he actually had a unique perspective because he said he was a nurse. So that's a good perspective to have. And I think he had kind of the right attitude as well, where, you know, some people may take that and they're just being selfish, only thinking about themselves rather than the people around them. He's given quite a good compliment to Barbados in itself, as well as the healthcare workers around. So I think that we also need to echo that and you know, say thank you to them, as well as, you know, to hopefully let people know what it's like being a patient and why you should be listening to all the rules and guidelines, and keeping our distance and all that.
100%. And the more seriously we take it, the sooner we can get out of this situation, you know? So
yeah,
I think we just got to keep going, keep doing what you have to do to get through in a safe manner.
Agreed.
Before we go, though, we have to get in our usual secret word shout out for this episode. And we had another listener this time that sent us our secret word from last week, which was vibing alone too, because we do be doing that a lot. Thanks to Matthew McKenzie for sending that in. We appreciate you. We appreciate everybody else who gives a listen. This week's secret word will be healthcare. So make sure to send that in. Get another shout out. I'll give you a second. That's enough time. Now that you've sent in your secret word, you can follow at Noel Experience on Instagram and let us know if you enjoy these interview type episodes. If you do, tell us who you'd like us to interview in a further one, or even let us know what we can do to improve, because as we said, we're only now starting this up. We're quite new to it. Give us any ideas, any segments that you would like us to do from there. That's about it.
Now, this week, we've decided, due to the type of episode, we're not going to include a sponsor or a sponsor writer, which brings this episode to a close. Morgan, where can they find you?
Morgan_AER.
And you can find us at The Noel Experience on Instagram and Facebook. There's Noel in Podcasts on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. And you can find myself at MatthewN11 on Instagram. Thank you guys for listening. We'll check you guys next time.
Peace. Toodles.